geologist and newsletter writer Mickey Folt from mercenarygeologist.com joins us now. Mickey has over 30 years' experience as an exploration geologist, searching for economic deposits of base and precious metals, industrial minerals, coal, uranium, oil and gas, and water in North and South America, Europe, and Asia. He's worked for junior explorers, major mining companies, private companies, and investors as a consulting economic geologist for the past 22 years. Mickey is well known throughout the mining and exploration community for his ongoing work as an analyst, newsletter writer, and speaker. Mickey, it's been a very long time. Nice to have you back. Welcome to the program.
Ellis, it has been way too long, and I welcome the opportunity to speak with you again.
Last time we spoke, it was 6 months ago in February, and
wow.
Here's a loaded question for you. How has the resource sector contracted in the last 6 months?
Well, it's contracted drastically. I don't have data in front of me for the last 6 months, Ellis, but I will tell you this. I was on a panel in Chicago at the end of April, and at that time, the Toronto Venture Index, which I consider the best proxy for the sector, closed on Friday at 1427. Today, we are at 1180. So do the math, and I'm doing this in my head. That's something on the order of 25% drop, something like that. So it's getting worse. We expected that because we were facing at that time the sell and may go away adage, which came about. Then we had ongoing euro problems, which, again, it looks to me like every May Greece becomes a problem and a focus. It's happened the last three Mays. And now we're in the summer doldrums. So, you know, I sat on a panel with some people that apparently are permeables in this business, media, newsletter writers, etc. And at that time, they were saying the bottom's in, it's got to get better. And I was kind of the contrarian view on this panel, and I go, what are the catalysts that are going to make it better? And, you know, people have vested interests. They talk their own book, and sometimes that comes back to bite them, in my opinion. There's no doubt, Ellis, we all talk our own book. You know, I do interviews, and I talk my book. But I think at some point you have to sit back and look at market fundamentals and be realistic about where are the markets going and what you see. And I think some people in this business, their views are colored by their need to keep listeners, their need to keep subscribers. And I disagree with those sorts of manipulations of what appears to me at this point to be a bear market that has no reason to get better, no catalyst upcoming until Labor Day. And we hope that Labor Day becomes a catalyst when everyone comes back to work.
So you don't think the bottom's in?
I'm not saying the bottom isn't in right now. I'm hoping that we've seen the bottom or we will see the bottom in the next month or so, and there is a catalyst on the horizon, and I've been saying this since April or May. The catalyst on the horizon is Labor Day, because we are always faced with the summer doldrums, and we're in the middle of that right now. I dare say if you call a broker or institutional fund manager or a professional investor in London, New York, Toronto, or Vancouver, or a CEO of a company, chances are that half of those people are unavailable right now because they're on vacation.
Vacation. I was just thinking the same thing. And you and I are working.
Well, I don't know. I suspect you're about the same as I am. We're workaholics and we don't know anything else to do. So, and we've got to stay busy and involved and interested. So, you know, I work hard and I play hard, but I'm always busy.
Well, that you are. And we've got a lot of things to talk about. We have something that's very topical today. Some mayhem seems to have been going on in the rare earth, rare metals market. Let's talk about that. What do you think triggered it?
Well, we've had a mini flash crash this morning. That's what Forbes has called it. And I've been glued to the business TV, one network or the other. I've flipped from one to the other to the other all morning long. But I got up this morning and one of my brokers had emailed me that Rare Element Resources had crashed and he did not know why. And then I started ferreting around and I saw that Molycorp had crashed, and Albany Minerals had crashed. And these three stocks are, of course, of interest, and I hold a couple of those stocks. They're of interest in the junior resource sector because of the rare earth element bubble, and Molycorp's the 800-pound gorilla on the block, and REE, Rare Element Resources, is one of the leaders in the field. And then Albany is a prospect generator with a significant gold discovery in Mexico, and they've been kind of a high-flying stock up and down, of course, over the last couple of years, but they've made a major discovery in Mexico. So something was going on, and as it comes out, there's a trader in New York, so-called dark pool trader, that is a market maker for many stocks, and they had some sort of trading glitch this morning. So the volumes have been extraordinary. Almaden at this point, we're talking mid-morning, mountain time. So, you know, the day in New York is what? Something on the order of 60% done right now. Almaden's traded over 4 million shares in New York. Rare Elements traded well over 6 million. Molycorp's 7.5 million or something right now as we speak. So it appears that there has been a trading glitch. SEC is investigating. And we'll see what happens here. But all these stocks, for the most part, hit the three I'm talking about, hit 52-week lows. But on the other side, there were some other stocks on the New York Exchange that hit all-time highs. The three we're talking about, geez, there were some incredible buying opportunities this morning. We'll see if these trades are allowed to stand. But they've all recovered significantly, although still all down for the day on tremendous volumes.
In your memory, has a flash crash had any long-term effect on the resource sector? We're not going to know for a couple of days yet, though, I suppose.
The only flash crash, that term came up, if memory serves, from a couple of years ago, a trading glitch in May that essentially shut the exchange down for the better part of an afternoon, if memory serves. There was no long-term effect one way or the other on that. Stocks rebounded and found the level that the market says they are worth, but it did initiate at that point a mini panic in major markets worldwide. Again, if memory serves, that was in mid-May of 2010, and that kind of initiated a mini panic that went on for something on the order of a month, because right after that we had another Greek crisis. So I would not expect this to have any long-term effect any stocks for the most part, other than the fact that they've gotten knocked down or pumped up. They will find their market, but it could lead to uneasiness in the market that this could happen. Once again, it appears it's a trading glitch only at one trading house, and it's not endemic to the whole market, but I had a CEO of one of these companies call me. I emailed the CEOs of these companies that I hold, and earlier this morning, before the news came out about what really happened, and he got back to me and said, you know, it's really a good thing. I was at my desk at 6:30 this morning when market opened in Vancouver, because I had institutions calling me wanting to know if there was anything going on with their stock, and they were about ready to push the sell button on this panic selling. So these sorts of things, who knows if they're market manipulation or what they are. The SEC is investigating. And Knight Capital, where I'm looking at screen right now, is down 20% on the day. So these things are serious. I'm sure the conspiracy theorists will scream market manipulation, but maybe it's just another fat thumb. Who knows?
Who benefits from a market manipulation in rare earths and rare metals?
The shorts, in this case, would have benefited this morning. So at first I thought, is this a coordinated short attack on a couple of rare earth element companies, specifically Molycorp and Rare Element Resources? And then I found out that Almaden had also gotten hit, and that's a gold company, a prospect generator, a hybrid prospect generator with a major discovery. So at that point, I logically concluded it was not a coordinated short attack. But there's lots of shorts on all these rare earth element stocks, and it sometimes those shorts win, and sometimes they lose big time.
As a subscriber to the mercenarygeologist.com, what am I supposed to do now?
Sit back, look, observe. Man, there was a couple couple of really nice buying opportunities this morning with both Rare Element Resource. Well, all three of those stocks were screaming buying opportunities, and that's obvious because how quickly they rebounded from their lows. They spiked down and they immediately came halfway back up, so you could tell people were pouring in to buy these stocks. And maybe it was a stink bid phenomena. Unfortunately, I didn't have any stink bids put in on any of these things, and I kind of missed them this morning. But, you know, even if markets are manipulated, and we all know that they are, then our task is to figure out ways to exploit that manipulation.
Which is what we spoke about in February. You like volatility.
I love volatility. Those are buying and selling opportunities. So volatility, it's all good for me. So embrace it.
What do you see for rare earths and rare metals in the long term?
Well, the bubble's burst. It leaked for a while. I'm convinced now it's burst. Now, that doesn't mean that there's still not 6 or 8 or 10 viable companies out there. There certainly are. Maybe I would probably cut that down to 5 or less right now. Some people will say 10. I would not argue vehemently about that. But we've paired all the pretenders are hanging on, or they've changed their business plans, or they've morphed from uranium companies to rare earth companies to silver explorers in Mexico, or from gas companies to uranium companies to rare earth companies to graphite companies. Who knows? But the contenders are still in play. They are relatively low valued right now. Savvy investors might consider adding some positions. You know, we've talked before about the cream of the crop in this space. Those companies that I promulgated as the cream of the crop 2 and 3 years ago are still the cream of the crop. So it's very predictable in these bubbles that they're are a few companies that will succeed or have good chances of succeeding, and then there's the rest. There's the sheep that followed everybody else over the cliff, and the smart ones are still standing on top. So where the sector's going exactly is hard to predict. I wouldn't even venture to say what valuations will be a year from now, but certainly the major players that succeed in their business plans will be the ones that you want to own and hang on to and become long-term plays. That said, you should always take profits on the upticks. And anybody that's played this sector for the last 2 or 3 years had plenty of opportunities to make a lot of money. You know, I've taken significant amounts of my positions off the table and all the stocks I own in the sector and taken good profits, and I'm still have significant shareholdings in 3 of the so-called cream of the crop, and I have target prices to sell pieces of those in tranches on the uptick, and I will continue doing that and hope to keep a core position for the ultimate success.
You don't sound like you've gotten hurt this past year.
Oh, I've been hurt tremendously. Go look at the Venture Exchange and my net worth in this sector. My net assets are probably no better or no worse than the Toronto Venture Index. Maybe a little better because I'm a trader, so I take profits when I see the opportunities. But yeah, I've gotten hurt, but I'm in this for the long haul. This is my job. I'm basically a professional investor, and this is the way I make money, is in the market. Other than, you know, the sponsors of my newsletter makes a really nice upper middle class living for me. But I'm a player, and I kind of look at the long term. I am a secular bull on commodities, and I think the corollary of that is that no matter what happens in the junior stocks, there will be rebounds and dips, and being a secular bull in commodities, I'm probably a secular bull in the junior resource sector for the most part. So keep on keeping on and trade smartly and intelligently and without emotion. I don't get up or down in this market any day. I just look at opportunities.
Speaking of opportunities, what's going on in India with a massive power outage affecting 670 million people, about half their population, with an antiquated electrical grid? Do you think this bodes well for uranium?
Well, India is one of the front runners in nuclear energy space. They have plans on the books. They are in construction of reactors. They've realized, rightly so in my opinion, that nuclear is the future of the power source. It's the cleanest source we have. It is arguably the safest source we have. I didn't see any people dying at Fukushima. And so India has made a commitment in the long term, 2020, 2030, et cetera, to become a nuclear energy power in the world. And so when we see these sorts of brownouts and power outages and realize that a significant part of the Indian population, I don't have those numbers in front of me right now, can't turn on the lights at night. So they live in the dark. When the sun goes down, it gets dark. They go to bed and go to sleep, and they get up in the morning when the sun rises. And there's still a significant part of the world, 25% of the world still does that. So it bodes well for not only nuclear, it bodes well for copper, because there needs to be copper wires and infrastructure built to get a significant part of the world population wired for electricity. It is my view that nuclear is the obvious choice, will be the obvious choice, to supply most of the future energy needs, the growth in energy needs in China and India and Africa and various parts of the world without electricity.
So uranium, in your opinion, based on what you've just stated, is a worthy long-term investment, and copper is probably very undervalued as well.
Well, I don't know if they're undervalued. Certainly, uranium is undervalued right now with its spot price, because the spot price of more or less $50 does not support new mine build-out. Very few deposits that we know that have reserves right now and are pending development can make money at $50 uranium. They require something in the order of $75 to $80 uranium. So that bodes well for the uranium price. Copper is a much shorter term view on copper, because it's Dr. Copper. It's got a PhD in economics. It most reliably reflects the industrial and world economic health on a short-term basis. So we're seeing copper prices as we speak somewhere around $3.40 a pound. I'm very comfortable with that. Good copper producers are going to be making money anywhere near north of $3 a pound. But by the same token, we are using a Bingham Canyon of copper every year. We are not replacing reserves in the world fast enough. So we're looking at, in the mid to long term, a looming shortage of copper. And part of the problem in the copper business and the uranium business is infrastructure build-out is very expensive, multi-billions of dollars to build a nuclear power plant, to develop a significant uranium mine. We're probably talking $1 billion plus or minus. To build a significant copper porphyry mine, we're talking on the order of $3 to $6 billion at this point. So we need capital in these industries. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to build new electrical wires or supply electricity to a growing population that is aware that most of the people in the world can turn on a light switch at night and get light. And the 25% of the world that can't do that right now wants that.
So contrary to what you stated in a news article in May, perhaps copper stocks don't suck like gold stocks do.
Yeah, well, I said gold stocks sucked, and I don't think I ever said copper stocks suck at that point. And the gold stocks suck was really the reasons for the bearish market in Toronto Venture Gold Explorers, and particularly Advanced Gold Explorers, juniors as a whole, and this would include the entire sector, not gold stocks, they've underperformed. They've overpromised and underdelivered, and I think the average retail investor has gotten a little bit fed up with this phenomena that goes on in our industry, the promotions and the promises that are not kept or pushed out to the future. And in addition, we have this very much risk-off and aversion to risk, and we're dealing with venture capital companies in this sector. So a lot of it has to do, the low liquidity has to do with people are confused by the major markets. They're reticent to take risk, and therefore they are not making any money because they don't have any place to put their money that's going to really make a return on investment, and they don't want to take on any risk at this point.
They've walked away from the sector.
Absolutely.
Now, I know you're an investor, and that's how primarily you make your living, but you're also a geologist. It seems that in the last couple of years that every time we've visited, you've either just come back from a big trip or are about to make one. Looking at properties on behalf of companies that you consult for or just for your own benefit, have you been making any trips?
Well, I've not made many trips. I'm actually off on another little venture and corollary to my business, a media opportunity right now. But I am going on the road very soon. I'm doing a four-country tour of Europe, look at four projects over the course of a couple of weeks, and very much looking forward to that, a couple of countries I've never been in before. And so I'm going to look at some what appear to be robust properties held by three companies I currently cover, but I'm also going to venture to a new country and look at a gold play with the idea that maybe this company is the next one I cover.
Let's talk about your website. How do we follow you?
I run two websites, mercenarygeologist.com, and then for bilingual speakers, I run mercenarygeologist.asia, which is a pared-down version in simplified Chinese. I'm also on the radio now, or internet radio, I should say, 24/7 with streaming audio at mercenarygeologist.fm. And this interview will be posted into the rotation there. Basically, we cover interviews done the last 6 weeks or 2 months on a weighted average sort of thing. So you can sit and listen and hear a bunch of interviews one after the other. And, of course, I run a free subscription-based service. I run a sponsorship model. So for subscribers, free email subscribers, it's all available at the minute that it's posted.
Mickey, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. I promise it's not going to be another 6 months. Probably next week we'll speak again after we see how this all shakes out. Thanks so much for joining me today on the program.
It's always a pleasure, and I welcome a regular rotation in your radio show, Ellis.
I've been speaking with the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. Find Mickey at mercenarygeologist.com and listen to this segment again on the podcast page of our website, ellismartinreport.com.